The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. Welcome. It is Monday, August 1st, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the program. We are back from the weekend where we had the opportunity, nay, may I say, the privilege and honor of standing on stage with the illustrious Willie Nelson, country music legend and longtime Normal supporter. That's the good news. The bad news is we didn't get our passes in time to be able to interview him backstage. So unfortunately, we do not have a Willie Nelson interview for you today like we had hoped to have. And believe me, I'm as disappointed as anyone else. Yes, I know. It's a terrible thing. But joining us here in the studio to talk a little bit about it is our own Ganja John.
Oh, no. Russ, I do this every show. I forget to press the radio button. Okay,
you muted the audience.
Okay, go ahead. Do that again, Russ.
And now, welcoming here on our right, the lovely and talented Ganja John.
Thank you.
Much better. Yeah. Wouldn't want your self-esteem to suffer.
No, not at all.
We can't have that. No, but I gotta give you props, Ganja John, because with a bad situation you had with the passes, you went through like a champ. You got one pass and just let everyone through.
I plowed through.
You just plowed through. Yeah, These are my crew.
Yeah, I literally just pointed to Russ and Ivan and said, crew, and just walked through.
That was wonderful.
And no problem at all.
Also joining us at the end of the table, Wiz Kaliko, our research analyst.
Hello.
And we got Kaliko. Oh, well, can you grab that bottle of Tapatio there? Nobody needs to see that.
Nobody needs to see our Tapatio.
I'm that hot.
Yeah, that's how hot Kaliko is. But Kaliko joined us out there as well. Did you have a good time out there on stage?
Oh, God, how could that not be a blast?
Yeah, what ended up happening is I just called Kaliko and I said, you need to come out here.
Get your normal shirt and get down here.
Yeah, and I got him in. No problem.
So we're going to do some show and tell at the in hour two. We'll show you some of the pictures that we took from the Willie concert and tell you a couple of stories about what happened. It was a good time. And, you know, next time we run into Willie, maybe we'll have a little more chance to talk to him. And we'll tell you more about that. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, guys. I have to say, I didn't go to the concert, but you guys tweeting it all and texting me, I felt like I was there. Yeah. And thank you for all that.
I even streamed about, 5 minutes of it until they caught me.
Yeah,
exactly. Shut that down. Oh, okay. Well, Cannabis Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So, Carrie, what do we got in the news today?
Well, we got a couple things that we have to finish up from last week. There's a Florida ruling that was pretty monumental I want to tell you about. Also, we had a former NBA player that got busted for eating some marijuana. We're going to go to Ohio, where they are pushing activists there for a medical marijuana bill. And we've got an update on Eddie Lepp.
All right. We'll get that to you right after our first break. And then after that break, we get to our 20 After Daily Toker Tunes. Today's Roots Monday. And we've got a video coming from Tom Paxton. It's the Talking Vietnam Potluck Blues. Should be interesting there from Cannabob. Also, today is the first of the month, so we get a chance to speak with Normal Executive Director Alan St. Pierre in our This Month in Normal segment. And at the end of the show, I got to do some ranting on those Colorado tilters who are messing up my comment pages. Be right back after this.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Did you know there are more Tokers than Texans? Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, host of Normal Show Live. It's true, there are more adults who will consume cannabis in America this year than the population of Texas. This and thousands of other statistics and polls are part of my new book, Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts, including 19 full-color poster-sized infographics of cannabis data.
A entirely legitimate topic for debate.
If we're going to have that debate, we need the facts. But Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts isn't just some listing of statistics and tables. It's truly a big book, a huge weatherproof binder that becomes its own 12 by 18 presentation easel. The colorful charts are jam-packed with facts that draw interest, and the explanatory text is all rigorously researched from reputable sources. You can make the case against prohibition with the government's own numbers. You can learn more about Normal's Big Book of Marijuana Facts by visiting stash.normal.org/bigbook. Pre-orders are available, and shipping begins September 1st, 2011. That's stash.normal.org/bigbook.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Activists in the state of Ohio are hoping that they can get a ballot measure in their state to let the voters decide if Ohio might be the next state to recognize medical marijuana. A group has turned in a petition full of signatures in what is the first step in that process. The hope is that they will be able to get the measure on the November 2012 ballot. The group has taken into consideration the other state's medical marijuana programs and the process when planning this latest attempt at making Ohio a state that recognizes legal marijuana for medical use. The proposal is titled Ohio Alternative Treatment Amendment and would actually amend the state constitution to allow caregivers to give patients that have a qualifying ailment up to 3.5 ounces of marijuana per month. Backers of the petition turned in 2,143 signatures to the Attorney General of the state, Mike DeWine, and the Secretary of State, John Husted. Now, election officials must validate 1,000 of those signatures. Then the language of the proposal will be studied in a review process to determine if the language passes a legality test. If the proposal passes the review process, it will be turned back into the hands of the petitioners to collect at least 385,245 more valid signatures to win a spot on the ballot. Included in the proposal was a recent study done by Creighton University that showed that marijuana can help stimulate appetite for those with eating disorders, that it can help control nausea and vomiting associated with cancer chemotherapy treatments, that it can decrease intraocular pressure, Parkinson's disease, post-traumatic stress disorder, and any disease that causes severe nausea, wasting, persistent muscle spasm, and chronic pain. Supporters of the measure say that the bill would prohibit the sharing of medical marijuana with minors and others, but that doesn't sit too well with Montgomery, Ohio County Sheriff Phil Plummer, who says he is adamantly against allowing medical marijuana into Ohio. He says that medical marijuana would create a variety of problems for law enforcement, that it would make too much marijuana available to kids in Ohio, and that patients might use marijuana and then get behind the wheel of a car and cause accidents. No word as Sheriff Plummer makes this much fuss when a pharmaceutical company gets approval for a new pain reliever.
Well, every time a new state comes up wanting to have medical marijuana, you hear the same arguments from the prohibitionists. Oh, it'll cause more people to drive and there'll be stoned drivers. Really? We looked at all the states that have medical marijuana and their DUIs and DUI fatality rates have all declined. Oh, well, it'll cause more kids to use pot. Really? We looked at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive from 1996 when California passed, and every state that has passed since then, and compared their 12 to 17-year-old smoking rates with their smoking rates now, and all but Maine have declined.
It'll cause there to be more marijuana, and
every excuse they come up with can be shot down by the facts and by just looking at the other states that have already passed medical marijuana. These arguments just don't work anymore. And we're talking about a state that has already decriminalized 100 grams of marijuana for any purpose. You can have up to 3.5 ounces, and if you're caught with it, it's just a ticket. So to go ahead and allow patients to actually use this legally and have twice that amount seems to me a no-brainer. It's kind of interesting. Ohio's like Oregon, where you have to get signatures first to get the petition reviewed, and then once it's reviewed, you have to go out and get signatures again to actually place it on the ballot. That can be confusing to a lot of people, so I encourage everyone in Ohio who wants to get involved with this, get involved with our Ohio affiliate, ohionormal.org, for more information.
Last week, Samaki Walker, a former member of the NBA, was arrested for drug possession charges during a traffic stop. The stop happened in Kingman, Nevada on Thursday, and according to the Las Vegas Journal-Review, Walker was stopped in his 2002 Mercedes-Benz. Official report claims that 10 grams of marijuana, along with a few prescription drugs and 8 bottles of liquid steroids, were taken from the vehicle. The weekend reports, though, are saying that Walker tried to actually eat the marijuana as the officers walked up to his vehicle. They say that the former NBA player tried to eat approximately 8 grams of marijuana, but they were still able to recover another 10 grams in his car. After a bumpy start, though, Walker did cooperate with authorities, especially once they got him back to a Mojave County jail. He told police that he uses the steroids to improve his athletic ability and movement, since he still plays basketball professionally in Syria. Steroids are legal for use in the league in Syria, but unfortunately, possession is a misdemeanor in Arizona. Walker, who lists Woodland Hills, California as his current hometown, was drafted into the NBA back in 1996 by Dallas. He had a 10-year career that ended in 2006 after playing for the Mavericks, the LA Lakers, Miami, Washington, Indiana, and the San Antonio Spurs. He was a member of the Lakers' 2002 championship team and started 63 games during that championship season. Bond was set at $2,000 for Walker's release, and he has a preliminary hearing set for this Friday. He is charged with multiple counts of various possession of illegal substances, and for that last-minute weed munching, he will be charged with tampering of evidence.
Carrie, could you remind me again, what state was this in?
It was in Kingman, Nevada.
In Nevada. Okay, so looking at normal.org for the state-by-state penalties. In Nevada, possession of less than an ounce, first offense, is a misdemeanor with a $600 fine. So if you got 18 grams on you, that's less than an ounce. Unless Samaki thought he could eat all 18 grams, and what is that, what, two-thirds of an ounce we're talking about? If he thought he could chew all 18 of it, then maybe he had a reason for doing that. But trying to lower it from 18 to something lower doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It does remind me of a good word of wisdom that was passed on to me by a friend one time. Never carry more in the front of your car than you can eat. You should generally, if you're transporting marijuana, keep it in your trunk. Keep it somewhere locked away so that this kind of situation and temptation doesn't occur to you. And as far as the steroids go, well, you know my opinion on that. I think, you know, we should be able to allow adults to put into their own bodies what they choose to put into their own bodies. But it's not a steroid show.
That would be a funny show. Last week, a federal judge declared Florida's drug statute unconstitutional on grounds that it doesn't require criminal intent to be proven by prosecutors. U.S. District Judge Mary Scriven of Orlando noted in an order that was issued last Wednesday that Florida is the only state to eliminate criminal intent as an element of the crime in its Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act. Now, lawmakers enacted that in 2002. Her decision, if upheld on appeal, could have the potential to overturn hundreds and even thousands of drug convictions from the last few years. In her ruling, Judge Scriven cited the example of a student who hides his cocaine in a friend's backpack without telling him. The friend, having no idea it is there, is guilty of possession even if he had no intent to possess it or didn't know it was actually even in there. She wrote that elimination of the intent element is atavistic and repugnant to the common law. She also disagreed with the prosecutor's argument that the friend in the case could raise his lack of knowledge as a defense. Former state prosecutor Bill Shepard called the ruling a huge deal and very important. Shepard, who now serves on a national legal counsel, said that the comments streaming in from prosecutors and defense attorneys from all around the country are praising the ruling. the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, the American Civil Liberties Union, and dozens of law professors filed briefs in the case. Word of the ruling lit up defense attorney listservers around the state all weekend long. Nellie King, president of the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, described the ruling as courageous and its implications as monumental. She also said that it was a surprise in the case that the government believes that stripping the attempt requirement from the drug law statute was lawful from the beginning. Its impact on past convictions and people that are now charged under the current Florida law will not be clear until an appellate court weighs in on Judge Scriven's ruling, as the state, of course, is expected to appeal this ruling.
Yeah, yeah, got to keep throwing pot smokers in jail. That's paramount. But as far as this Florida no intent law goes, you know, people were complaining. I've read some commenters that were complaining about this thing. Well, now anybody who's caught with drugs can just say, I didn't know it was there. Yeah, yeah, they're doing that already, and they're already prosecuting those people already. What this judge was talking about is a real world situation where someone seriously doesn't know that they have the drugs on them. In every other criminal conviction there is out there, there's a concept about mens rea. You have to have the ability to have the intent to commit the crime in order for that crime to be committed. And she is just pointing out here that just merely the possession of the item without intent goes against the constitution of that state. Now, I don't know for sure if this is the only state that does this, because I do seem to recall in the state of Hawaii, if you're in a car and someone else in the car has marijuana on them, everyone in the car gets that possession ticket. So there's a situation where you're not even possessing marijuana and have no intent to possess marijuana, but getting busted for it because someone else's intent to possess marijuana, you just happen to be riding in the car with them. We'll keep our eyes on this one. I'm going to ask some of my friends who are both on the Normal Legal Committee and the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers to weigh in on this later in the week.
And another court case update from last week. A federal appeals court has upheld the conviction and the 10-year prison sentence for medical marijuana advocate Eddie Lepp. He was accused of growing 32,000 marijuana plants that he insisted were for medical patients and his fellow Rastafarians. The cannabis was grown on his own land in Lake County, California. Now, Charles Eddie Lepp was sent to prison in 2009 by a federal judge, but he became a legend after using the courtroom as a platform for protesting cannabis laws. His 10-year sentence was the least amount of time that a federal judge could give him in the case, since he was growing at least 1,000 marijuana plants, which holds a required mandatory minimum sentencing of 10 years. U.S. District Judge Marilyn Hall Patel in San Francisco said that they were bound by the law and the sentencing requirements, and now the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has agreed. The three-panel judge review in the appeals court found that the statutory minimum sentence was neither cruel or unusual as a punishment for the crime. This case stretches back to 2004 when federal agents arrested him for growing the field of marijuana that could be seen from Highway 20 where he lived. Lepp said as a medical marijuana patient, he had the right to grow and use cannabis, and also as a Rastafarian minister, where they celebrate marijuana as a sacrament, that he was growing the cannabis to share freely with his 2,500 members of his church. He was barred from using his religious views as a defense to the charges in court, but said at his sentencing that his prosecution served the government's compelling interest in preventing diversion of a sacramental marijuana to non-religious users. Michael Hinckley, Lepp's lawyer, argued that the 10-year prison sentence for the 57-year-old veteran in ill health was disproportionate for the crime. He was deeply disappointed by the appeals court decision and called the thought of Lepp spending the next 10 years in a prison cell tragic. So please support Eddie Lepp by sending him a card in jail and fighting for the rights of all cannabis users.
Yeah, and for more information on that, visit freeeddylepp.com, FreeEddyLepp, freeeddylepp.com. It's Charles Edward Lepp, number 90157-011, Federal Prison Camp Lompoc, 3705 West Farm Road, Lompoc, California, 93436. And as far as his sentence, you know, the minimum sentence, 10 years here, drugs are the only thing in America where we do not give judges the lenience to be able to judge the situation and come up with a sentence on their own. Only with drug sentences do they have to put down a mandatory minimum sentence. And I know about the letter of the law. Do you know what the letter of the law would say if I were to take a barrel of oil and dump it into the Gulf of Mexico? You can darn well bet I'd get some prison time, but yet we have to see anyone from a British Petroleum doing a single day of time for what they did to our Gulf Coast. Wall Street, I'll tell you what, if I were swindling people like Wall Street did over the past 3 or 4 years, I'd certainly be doing some prison time, but not one Wall Street executive has been called before a court or has served a day of time. We live in a country where there's a 26% clearance on rape cases and where the state of California has been ordered by a federal judge to release 32,000 prisoners because they're 200% overcrowded in the prisons there, and you want to keep Eddie Lepp in prison for 10 years? Screw you!
I think it's time to take a break for Eddie.
Yeah, let's take a break for Eddie, and, you know, some of the genetics we're smoking may have came from his farm at one point.
Probably.
We'll see you in a minute.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do it.
Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ encouraging you to check out the great music this summer. And one group you should definitely check out are big supporters of Normal and marijuana legalization, and that's Slightly Stupid. Get all the details online at SeedlessSummerTour.com. Slightly Stupid. Revolution. Shwayze. And Cisco. It's the stoniest show of the summer, coming to Missoula, Boise, Redmond, Washington, Eugene and Jacksonville, Oregon, Lake Tahoe, Berkeley, San Diego, Salt Lake City, Aspen, Denver, Asbury Park, Guilford, New Hampshire, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Baltimore, Charlotte, Cocoa Beach, Boca Raton, St. Augustine, Atlanta, Raleigh, Columbus, Ohio, Chicago, Mesa, Arizona, and Irvine, California. Don't miss it. For more details, visit SeedlessSummerTour.com. Seedless Summer Tour is sponsored by Seedless.com, Sector 9, Crude Shark, Revolution Vodka, and Silver Surfer Vaporizers.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you Tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey everybody, this is Canna Bob with another video version of the Roots Monday Toker Tune. Today we've got some folk music for you from Mr. Tom Paxton. Tom Paxton is one of the foremost folk singer and songwriters in American music history. He's written music for everyone from Pete Seeger to Willie Nelson. And today's tune is called Talking Vietnam Potluck Blues. And as you may be able to derive from the title, it is about smoking pot in Vietnam. But it ends the nice way, where we get high with the enemy instead of fighting with them. So sit back and get high with Tom Paxton and the Talking Vietnam Potluck Blues on your Roots Monday Toker Tune.
Now when I landed in Vietnam, I hardly got to see Saigon. They shaped us up and called the roll, and off we went on a long patrol, swapping lies, swatting flies, firing the odd shot here and there. The captain called a halt that night, and we had chow by the pale moonlight. A lovely dinner they planned for us, with a taste like a seat on a crosstown bus. Some of the veterans left theirs laying in the cans for the Viet Cong to find, deadlier than a landmine. Naturally, somebody told a joke, and a couple of the fellas began to smoke. I took a whiff as the cloud rolled by, and my nose went up like an infield fly. The captain, this blonde fella from Yale, he looked at me and said, "What's the matter with you, baby?" Well, I may be crazy, but I think not. I'd swear to God that I don't smell pot. But who'd hell have pot in Vietnam? He said, "What do you think you've been sitting on?" These funny little plants. Thousands of them. Good God Almighty. Pastures of plenty. So we all lit up, and by, the whole platoon was flying high. With a beautiful smile on the captain's face, he smelled like midnight on St. Mark's Place. Cleaning his weapon, chanting something about Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The moment came, as it comes to all, when I had to answer nature's call. I was stumbling around in a beautiful haze when I met a little cat in black PJs. Rifle, ammo belt, Dunlop sandals. Looked up at me and said, "What's the matter with you, baby?" He said, "We're camping down the pass and smell you people blowing grass. And since by the smell you're smoking trash, I brought you a taste of a special stash. Straight from Uncle Ho's Victory Garden. We call it Hanoi Gold." So his squad and my squad settled down, passed some lovely stuff around. All too soon it was time to go. The captain got on the radio, said, "Hello, headquarters." "Hello, headquarters. We have met the enemy, and he has been smashed."
Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Normal. And if you're one of the 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, you need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrests of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORNL.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Founded in 1970, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the oldest, largest, and most popular lobby of cannabis users in the world. From our Washington, D.C. offices, we lobby our federal government. And from our chapters nationwide, we lobby our state and local governments to end the war on American citizens who choose to use cannabis responsibly. We take you now to our nation's capital for a visit with Executive Director Alan St. Pierre and a look at this month in Normal.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're speaking with Alan St. Pierre out in Washington, D.C. How you doing, Alan?
Hey, Russ, how are you today?
Doing great. Of course, this month in Normal, we're looking forward to all sorts of great events and legislative hearings and changes. And, of course, no event any bigger than the 20th annual Seattle Hemp Fest coming the third weekend of this month. Tell us about Normal's involvement.
Well, Normal will certainly have a booth that we share with High Times, which when you put the two brands together makes it probably the most popular booths at the very large multi-hundred-thousand-person event. We're going to score some big Normal helium balloons this year, so you really can't miss the booth. And it is a great gathering place, and we distribute lots of free Normal swag and information. There'll be four or five Normal board of directors that'll be speaking and at the booth to talk to the public. We probably have 5 to 6 Normal chapters that will have separate booths to work their constituents and promote whatever particular projects they have going on. And we'll be speaking multiple times from multiple stages. And I don't think any of us will have a voice after the second day.
I know. Yeah. After 2 days is usually how long this thing goes on. With it being 3 days this year, we're going to have to get extra vitamins, I suppose.
And lots of extra cannabinoids.
I think so. Speaking of cannabinoids, you know, City of Seattle has been in the news recently in that their city council approved dispensary regulations despite Governor Gregoire vetoing such a thing. Seattle has a long time been, you know, lowest law enforcement priority on marijuana crimes, and the most recent city attorney to be announced there or to take office there says he's not going to prosecute minor marijuana possession arrests. So as far as an environment for our audience, for tokers to come out to a hemp fest, this could possibly be one of the freest environments we are seen at.
I would think so. The good city attorney, let alone most of the city council, and even the current chief of police who took over for our current drug czar, Mr. Kurlikowski, they are all generally in favor of some degrees of reform, way better than we see for most of the country. So if you do have the time off and you've wanted to go to Seattle and you've wanted to go to the biggest marijuana rally on earth, this could be it.
Yeah, you got to make it there. 20th anniversary. It's August 19th, 20th, 21st at Myrtle Edwards Park, right there on the waterfront near the piers, all that stuff. About 1.6 miles apart, 3 stages, and completely free, although they do ask for donations as you come in, and please help support the Seattle Hemp Fest. They need all the help they can get. Alan, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the East Coast, because we're out here in the West, and you know we do a lot of stories on California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and so forth. The most recent medical marijuana states, New Jersey and Delaware, and then, of course, the district that you're in, have all had some more movement on their programs, even though they're not fully operational yet. Update us on where medical marijuana is on the East Coast.
Delaware, which was the latest state to run afoul of the federal government's memos telling them, you know, don't move forward with any of these reforms. Well, Delaware effectively said F you and passed a medical marijuana law. Now, that will be implemented in time, and it's the most recent one to come to be. In New Jersey, finally, the governor has signed off, again, against the warnings of the federal government, and creating some sort of regulations that will be rolled out here in the next 2 to 3 weeks that might take upwards of 6 months to finally implement. But he has been the major logjam, if you will. And here in the District of Columbia, there were 175 letters of intent applications for medical cannabis dispensaries. The regulatory agency that's in charge of this here in D.C. is going to hone this down to about 30 or 40 in the next week or so, and they're going to issue no more than 15 licenses for dispensaries and cultivation centers. And the smart money bets that none of this is going to come to be, meaning that a patient is actually going to legally access medical cannabis until May 2012.
Boy, and this just highlights, you know, the difference. You know, I often talk about how the issue of gun regulations is a different story in Cleveland, Ohio than it is in Canyon County, Idaho. I think medical marijuana may be another issue like this. And we talk about medical marijuana in the West, it's a whole different animal than the medical marijuana we're seeing develop in the East. Do you see this East Coast paradigm of them bragging about the most restrictive, most well-regulated medical marijuana? Is that the future of medical marijuana in this country?
It seems to be, and it's something that we've talked about for well over a year and a half since the New Jersey law first passed. I mean, strategically, I think a lot of folks at Normal recognize that that might be the high watermark politically of patients having access to homegrown cultivated cannabis, and for patients to have retail access in a safe retail environment. Because here on the East Coast, other than Maine, which has fits and starts in even getting its retail operations off the ground, and that has all kinds of other internal problems regarding the advocates themselves, their funding, lawsuits amongst who has the rights to proprietary information. So the whole East Coast is entirely dysfunctional regarding patients actually having access to it. And yes, politicians and editorial pages boast two things. One, how restrictive they are, and two, how they are totally not like in California.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what we hear is, we don't want to be like California. We don't want to be like California, despite the fact that Californians don't seem to mind it so much. It's an interesting situation. We've also got, and I don't know if you caught the news that we did this earlier in the show, but a Florida judge declaring their 2002 drug law unconstitutional because it lacked the criminal intent. I know that just came up today. Have you had a chance to review that?
Well, it did come out last week, and it is definitely, I can promise you right now, there are a lot of lawyers in Florida rewriting a lot of motions to get before judges and try to retry some cases, because what this Tampa judge did, was this federal judge in the Tampa Bay area did, was definitely roll a grenade on the table for prosecutors down there regarding how they're going to get convictions in the future on the Controlled Substances Act, and it is definitely a bit of a head-scratcher. It's not clear to me, as a non-lawyer, that it's going to terribly upset the apple cart in terms of marijuana prohibition. As soon as this decision came down Thursday of last week, we took immediately calls from patients who wanted to go public with their use, individuals who wanted to open up dispensaries that night and go out with their press releases declaring that the law was devoid. We certainly counseled them otherwise and suggested that they talk to Normal legal committee members in Florida. And I think in the next week or so, we'll see some emerging strategy, both activist and legal, about what does this interesting decision really mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, in the earlier response, you pointed out that the governors in Delaware and New Jersey, even though faced with these U.S. attorney letter threats, went ahead with what they're doing. And Maine has done the same thing. They've gone ahead with their dispensary situations. So politically speaking, where does that leave Arizona Governor Brewer and Washington Governor Gregoire, who made that their excuse for why they fought against dispensary regulations? Does this give us a wedge or a strategy for getting them to change their mind?
Well, it certainly does make them look a little silly that they went out there and engaged in a big act of CYA by putting out those memos asking for these opinions, when they should look to the very voters who empower them and provide them with taxes. And, of course, Mrs. Brewer couldn't be more of a hypocrite regarding her position on immigration and states' rights vis-a-vis cannabis medical patients and the federal government. So we see that the states, as you mentioned, Delaware, I throw in Connecticut, Vermont as well, who all bucked the federal government on this and have moved forward with legislation or promulgating rules that ran up against some of that sage advice they were getting from the federal government. And that, particularly in Arizona and Washington, these officials should follow Tip O'Neill's maxim: all politics are local.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And as far as Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, I kind of noted when the story came out that when it comes to Mexican immigrants, Arizona's right. When it comes to medical marijuana, the feds are right. But we don't know what she thinks about Mexican immigrants that are using medical marijuana. So we'll have to, have to keep track of that. That might cause her head to explode. I'm glad you mentioned Connecticut. Connecticut's the 14th state to decriminalize. Has that law gone into effect now? And if so, has there been any ripple effect from that?
No ripple effect so far. It did go into effect officially midnight July 1st, and so we're just barely into 1 month of implementation. However, what news articles have been written so far have been reasonably good as compared to what happened, and this is a prime example of when the body politic driven by law enforcement and its institutions are really opposed to something publicly. In Massachusetts a couple years ago, when the citizens voted for decriminalizing marijuana at only the 65 percentile in every single city and town in the state except for three, instead, here we see in Massachusetts, just north of Connecticut, here we are 2 years later, and the police and editorial boards that were against this are still belly aching against the decriminalization there, whereas we don't see anything like that in Connecticut, just a few miles away.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. And speaking of initiatives, also in the news today, we covered how Ohio is moving forward with a medical marijuana initiative. Here in the state of Oregon, I think we now have up to three initiatives jockeying for a position on the ballot that would have something to do with marijuana legalization. We're going to see possibly two in Washington, maybe three or four in California, Massachusetts. We've got all these states that are pushing these initiatives now, multiple initiatives. Do you see the promulgation of multiple initiatives to be a downside? Do you see a downside to that for marijuana reformers in that it may confuse the electorate, or should it just be, you know, let the best idea win?
Well, there's the egalitarian part of me that says, you know, let all flowers bloom and let the best ideas rise like cream to the top. However, politically speaking, realistically speaking, here on K Street, these initiatives, ever since 1995, have only passed if one or two billionaires, either Peter Lewis or George Soros, decided to back it. If they didn't back it, it didn't happen. And as much as activists and organizations like Normal can take a lot of pride for working many years in this area, if those two billionaires don't plop down millions of dollars in advance of an initiative and set up all of the structure needed, there has never been a medical marijuana initiative that has ever passed. So it passes prologue unless one of those two or amalgam of billionaires comes involved here, then that will likely dictate which of these state initiatives are going to move forward. Yes, in a particular state, if there are three or four at the beginning of the process, it certainly is a good opportunity to have an intellectual discussion. It would be terrible, strategically speaking, if there are multiple ones on the ballot. And so, thankfully, going back to my original point, the money tends to be attracted to the more mainstream, more pragmatic initiatives, some of which, components of them, activists from Normal, including myself, don't always like. But in terms of who has the best chance of pass and where is this major bet and investment of money going to go, I would guess that you mentioned earlier the states I'm thinking are Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, possibly Massachusetts. Those states all have the opportunity right now to have a single-funded initiative that has a very good possibility of passing. And with four or five of them in a presidential election cycle, as contentious as this one's going to be, that I like the chances of one of those five passing. It would be tremendous if it was a bellwether state like California, but in the end, it looks like 2012 will be the busiest year in any of our lives for seriously advancing the topic of legalizing marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we can point to as a success in this movement, you know, since 1970 and Normal's founding, we've got 14 decriminalization states, 16 medical marijuana states. Not one of them have actually lost that ground that they've gained. They've all, you know, decrim hasn't been repealed, medical marijuana hasn't been repealed, except we saw this year in the state of Montana, where medical marijuana actually got repealed, only to be saved by the Democratic Governor Brian Schweitzer, and then this new bill, this what they so-called repeal light, has come into its place. So maybe we have lost some ground in Montana. And then South Dakota, which has tried twice to pass medical marijuana, went from a 48% support in 06 to a 36% support in 10, you know, a drop of 12 percentage points in support when the initiative really didn't change that much. Are we seeing the other side of this pendulum swing now as far as public support for changing marijuana laws?
Well, I can say in the last year that the focus and polling groups that have been done behind the scenes are showing a plateauing effect where we are definitely not gaining ground, particularly on the issue of legalization. We sort of plateaued at around 45 to 47% depending on the survey group you're looking at. And there is definite concern that what is called the California conundrum hangs out there like a big booger at the end of the nose, just simply driving everybody crazy, that it's hard to point to it as a viable model, even if everybody recognizes that California, this nation state unto itself, has a quasi-legal marijuana system. However, unlike Colorado, it has no semblance of control, regulation, and taxation. So and then another factor to all of this is that, and I've just written a piece for High Times magazine about this called The Fear Factor, and that is, we know that in most polls and focus groups, we're still coming in at about 50% of the public illogically, irrationally, bizarrely, fears marijuana more than alcohol. And it's not likely we're going to prevail in any of these legalization initiatives if that number doesn't come down significantly. We can't have the public illogically fearing a safe, non-toxic, reasonably benign, but not harmless drug like marijuana, when we all know that we'd only have to drink a few fluid ounces of a distilled liquor to put most of us in a near coma and cause unbelievable impairment. Mm-hmm. So that is something that we have to work on. And so in that light, the newest project from Normal going into this end of 2011 is the Rethink the Leaf Project, and we've just launched it in the last week or so, and we will be rolling it out in a much larger degree. And this is this notion behind the scenes that we as a nation need to rethink the leaf. We need to rethink about marijuana and its legal status as juxtaposed to alcohol. So one of the other projects that has emerged in the last week or so that I'll announce here today is the Normal Prohibition Viewing Party. Starting October 2nd, PBS will be showing the new Ken Burns series on alcohol prohibition. It's a multi-show series, and like most of his series, it's already well received by critics, and I've already seen about a 10-minute teaser flyer on it, and it is remarkable. What Mr. Burns and his production company, along with PBS, who has agreed to broadcast this, is going to do more to educate Americans about the folly of prohibition of popular substances, in the case of alcohol prohibition, booze, in the case that you and I have been living through our whole lives, Russ, marijuana prohibition, that he is going to lay out the strongest argument we have ever seen to the American lay public about why in a capitalistic-leaning country, a free market-oriented society like ours, you just can't have prohibition, as it absolutely manipulates and screws up so many different other institutions, whether it's the banking institutions, law enforcement, public health, our international borders, just the way we interact with people, the way that we look to police as adversaries, and they look to people who use marijuana as somebody that is worthy of arrest and suffers from moral turpitude. And we know that alcohol prohibition was an utter failure. Even though alcohol controls today are not perfect, they largely meet the wanted goals of society. And so Normal is going to organize prohibition viewing parties all around the United States so we can sit in our living rooms and watch this really, really well done historical treatises that is based on Daniel Okrent's great book that came out last summer called Last Call. And I can see that Mr. Okrent is a major contributor to the series. And so anybody who read that book and knows the work of Mr. Burns, realizes that this is going to be an opportunity that reformers we could never afford and would never have this opportunity. And so October 2nd, which also happens to be, ironic or not, the actual beginning date of when prohibition for marijuana went into effect, October 2nd, 1937, is when the law actually went into effect. Regrettably, tomorrow, August 2nd, is the day President Roosevelt signed the law into effect.
Interesting. All right, so that's Ken Burns' upcoming documentary on Prohibition, folks. You'll know Ken Burns. He did those fantastic series on the Civil War, on baseball, and he treats this with as much in-depth reporting and the serious nature of his reporting that he did those other subjects. I'm sure this will be a big help to our movement. Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, one last question before we let you go. The other big thing happening, of course, in 2012 will be a presidential election cycle, and the first presidential election cycle since Citizens United allows corporations to pretty much donate as much money as they want to anybody they want for any message they want. And in a recent episode of Real Time with Bill Maher, DPA's Ethan Nadelman pointed out that at least at the beginning of his term, Obama was pretty good on the drug issue. He supported the needle exchange and reducing the crack powder disparity and not going after medical marijuana clubs. Of course, that seems to have changed. Do you see these drug war issues and Mr. Obama's handling of them to be a political liability for him in 2012?
I think so. I don't think he's going to get a challenger from the left. If he did, I have to imagine that challenger will come in with a fistful of rhetoric about the war on some drugs and how much this president has largely maintained the status quo. However, the Republicans' field is growing quite large, and it has already two dedicated legalizers in it, and I suspect by the time it hones down, there might be a couple more in there as well. So the Republicans, oddly, might be the entity that are going to at least have a discussion. There will be some people in that caucus that will be arguing that we should have legalization of marijuana as a focus. We can also see from a number of surveys of millennia groups in the United States, people basically under the age of 40 years old, that they are having some serious disconnect with many of the issues around Mr. Obama, and some of them are around the criminal justice issues. And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years with President Obama at every single one of his electronic town meetings that he's held, at every single one, the number one question to him has been, should we legalize marijuana? And everyone, he's either not answered it or demeaned the question. So, yes, culturally, I think it'll be a stickling point for those who think of themselves as single-issue advocacy voters, most notably. So it's going to be a very, very interesting year, to say the least. One last announcement, going into mid-August, there will be a new DVD out called It's a Normal Life.
Oh, yes.
And there'll be more information coming out about it in the next couple of days and weeks throughout the podcast here and on Normal's webpage. But this is not a Normal production. We ourselves did not film it and produce it, but it's a film company that came to us after 3 years of filming all around the United States at major hemp fests, at Normal conferences, at protests. And about 6 months ago, they said, you know, in the end, after interviewing all these people, everybody in this really just wants a normal life. They don't want to be treated like a criminal. If they use marijuana for medical purposes, they don't want to be treated like a leper. These individuals just want a normal life. So we lent our name and title and actual logo to this DVD production. Many, many activists, including yourself, are featured in it, Russ. And so it will be out in a couple of weeks. And we think right now it's probably one of the best documentaries out there about marijuana law reform.
Yes, and my thrill about it is that it gives Normal a Kevin Bacon number of 3.
Oh, that's right. And so please get me, how do we get to 3 on this Kevin Bacon scale?
It's you check out oracleofbacon.org, but basically because we were in a movie with Ray Manzarek, who was in a movie with Rob Zombie, who was in a movie with Kevin Bacon.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, very
so,
good.
So the keyboardist from The Doors and one of the best goth rockers out there, Rob Zombie, and then Kevin Bacon. So that's some pretty good company.
Well, that'll be out in a couple of weeks, and it's going to be marketed with a joint CD, if you will, called The Hempsters, which I've also viewed, a very, very good documentary about the modern industrial hemp movement. These are two great DVDs for marijuana law reformers to get this coming year.
All right. Check them all out, and we'll have more information about them up at our blog at stash.normal.org. Alan St. Pierre is the longest-serving executive director of a marijuana policy organization in the United States. And Ganja John also wanted to say something.
I wanted to say thank you for helping us out to get to the Willie concert this weekend, and it was life-changing. And just another reason why I'm going to continue to volunteer for Normal for the rest of my life.
Thank you, John, and it was a real pleasure to help you guys in any way possible, and to hook up with Willie, why not?
Why not, indeed. All right, Alan, thank you for joining us here on our This Month in Normal segment, and we'll talk to you at Seattle Hemp Fest and on the show next month.
Looking forward to seeing everybody out in the great, sane state of Washington.
Somewhat sane. We'll see you again. And coming up next, we've got a radical rant on the Treat It Like Tomatoes crowd. Stick around.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant. All right, folks, not a whole lot of time for the radical rant this time, but I got to get something off my chest. I wrote a post called Stoners Against Legalization 2, Colorado Boogaloo, and this had to do with Kathleen Trippi and Robert Chase, Corey Donahue, Miguel Lopez, all these guys out in Colorado who think that the legalization of 1 ounce of marijuana and 6 marijuana plants, as proposed by the MPP Safer Sensible initiative that's already gathering signatures, already gotten a ballot title, you know, the one that they've already done the work on. They don't like that 1 plant and 6, or 1 ounce and 6 plants, because that wouldn't be true legalization, right? So they're opposing that. And you know how I feel when anybody opposes marijuana legalization in any form. I don't care if you don't like this particular amendment and you're working on a different amendment, or you don't like this initiative and you're working on your own initiative. That's great. Promote your initiative. But to go trashing another initiative that doesn't go as far as you'd like it to go is to put yourself on the same stage standing there with the prohibitionists, the drug warriors, and the drug czar who would lock me up for 1 ounce and 6 plants. Just like Dragonfly De La Luz stood up on stage with a DEA agent in opposition to Prop 19, you know the vitriol she got from me? You all are going to get the same from me if you continue to stand against any incremental step in legalization. Again, if you don't like the small step, that's fine. Fight for a bigger step, but don't fight against the small step. Now, in reference to this, Mr. Robert Chase wrote up on my blog basically blah, 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 and said that I was lying. I was a liar. I was lying to my readers. You sure like to call people liars when they're not within arm's reach of you, don't you, Robert? You want to stand by that? You sure? because I may be, in your opinion, misinformed, ignorant, uneducated, or possessing of a different of opinion, but to lie is to know the truth and purposefully subvert and distort that with a falsehood in order to serve an agenda. And I assure you, regardless of how we may agree or disagree, I do not lie to my readers. So you want to call me a liar, Robert Chase? You better think about doing it in person. I stop by Denver every now and then. I'll give you my phone number if you'd like to meet. We can talk this out man to man. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for the show. For Ganja John, Wiz Khalifa, and Cannabis Carrie, thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.